Hump Day. It's Wednesday, May 6th. I'm Adam Azer with Chris Towers and Scott White down in Fort Lauderdale. Hello, fellas. How you guys doing today?
Great, Adam Azer.
How are you
on this fine Wednesday?
Well, regretting a decision I made last night, I went with the enchiladas instead of the burrito on Cinco de Mayo, and it was just a terrible mistake.
I am pro enchilada. I say the enchilada is nearly always better than the burrito.
Well, I like the burrito when it's cooked like an enchilada with the sauce and the cheese
on it. But that's just an enchilada then.
Except it has a flour tortilla instead of a corn tortilla.
Corn tortillas are better.
Oh, there's no way.
I'm with Scott on this one. So anyway.
That's crazy.
I hope you guys enjoyed your Cinco de Mayo. We have so much baseball to get to. There were 14 games yesterday. There was another rainout in Colorado. But email us at fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. We will be reading some emails today. I got a nickname of the day for you. We're going to start it with the nickname of the day. Sometimes I think Baseball Reference makes up these nicknames, but they are Baseball
Reference.
This
one is actually real. I can confirm
this. Really?
I remember where it came from.
It's a corporate nickname, right?
Like, I can tell you guys the story.
Okay.
Behind... Tacoby.
I know there is a story, but I don't know what it is.
Behind Tacoby Bellsbury.
You remember the 2007 World Series? He came up late in the season. He was on the roster. Taco Bell ran a promotion that whenever someone stole a base in the World Series, they would give away a taco. And he was the first guy to steal a base in the World Series. So that was where the Tacoby Bellsbury name came from.
Who gave it to him?
I think it just came naturally.
Oh.
Corn tortilla or white tortilla taco?
Well, they don't really have a corn tortilla at Taco Bell. They have like the crunchy taco, and the crunchy tacos suck.
Yeah,
let's keep it 100.
You like a soft corn
just
tortilla.
just get nachos if you want the crunchiness. Just falls apart when you're eating it. It doesn't work
100%. Now listen, Ellsbury is one of the hottest hitters in baseball. Last 12 games he's 23 for 49. He's not homering this year like he was last year, at least thus far. He has one home run. I think he got off to a slow start with the homers last year as well. But yeah, Ellsbury's hitting great. And right now he's at 358 with 11 steals and 15 attempts. And what do you guys think about Tacoby Bellsbury?
He's good.
Yeah, I'm not sure there's really any status change from coming into the year when he was right around 12th outfielder for me. Still there. You always want to watch the steals with him because they have been a little up and down over the years, but he leads the AL or is at least tied for the lead with 11.
Okay. Then how about stat of the day?
Not sure if he leads it outright.
That's okay. Stat of the day number one is Bartolo Colon. He beat Baltimore last night as a member of the Mets. And now he has beaten Baltimore as a member of 7 different teams, and he is the first pitcher in at least 100 years to beat the same opponent as a member of 7 different teams. That's from the Associated Press. And Bartolo Colon is awesome right now. He has 1 walk and 34 strikeouts on the year. What do you think of this guy?
Well, I'm not exactly changing my evaluation of him from where I was coming into the year either.
He's 43 years old, or 41 years old, I guess. I don't think this is a guy that you possibly can change your opinion on. He is who he is.
And this was a good strikeout game. His first game of the season was a good strikeout game. He's still only at 7.6 per 9, which isn't, I think he's very likely going to end up at 6.5 like he was last year, and then injury risk on top of it. He's a good innings eater. That makes him a pitcher to stream in mixed leagues. Obviously, he looks better than that now, but if you can get somebody to buy high on him based on that 5-1 record, I think that's a smart plan.
Well, Colon is 93% owned, and if I owned him, which I don't, in any league, I would be willing to drop him. I mean, I know that the numbers look really good, 5-1 with a 2.90 ERA, but I'd be willing to drop him if there was anybody that I liked. How do you guys feel?
I hear you. I probably wouldn't. Just in the respect that I think somebody would trade for him, for somebody who's not worth dropping. So I probably would at least explore that fully before I dropped him, but I get what you're saying. I think in the long run, he's going to be a fringy mixed league guy.
Stat of the day number two. Let's look at Andrew Cashner, who did not have a very good start last night at the Giants. He's kind of a home road guy. He's had an ERA below 2 at home and above 4 or at 4 even or above on the road 2013, 2014, and now in 2015. That might be more of a stat for people who play in daily leagues with daily lineups or just DFS, but thoughts on Cashner?
It's weird because he's not – you would expect a player who has those kind of home road splits between Petco and the road to be a fly ball pitcher. You would expect him to look better at home when those fly balls are dying in the deep outfield. He's a ground ball pitcher. It's a really strange, there's not a lot of logic to it, but at some point over, you know, 2.25 seasons, you just kind of have to accept that it's real.
Coming up on today's show, we have a lot of struggling hitters that should be doing a lot better. Victor Martinez, JD Martinez, Carlos Santana, Matt Kemp. We'll talk about those guys. Alex Cobb, we're going to look at his injury. In fact, we'll do that right now as we go into the big news. Alex Cobb is going to try to pitch through a torn elbow ligament. So Masahiro Tanaka does it, and now everybody wants to do it. This is bad news for Alex Cobb. And I guess owners probably shouldn't drop him yet, but thoughts?
I moved him way, 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 way down in my rankings, like to the Matt Cain, Mike Minor territory. Because that's how little confidence I have in this going well for him.
Yeah, I mean, you have to think there's a 50% chance at best that he pitches in the majors.
Well, but why? I mean, if, not that I disagree, but just to bring it up, if it's working for Tanaka, sort of, and the doctors,
he's on the DL.
The doctors are, yeah, with a seemingly unrelated injury.
Yeah.
And the doctors are not going to recommend surgery. If that's the case, if they're not going to recommend Tommy John surgery, why can't it work for Cobb?
Well, they're not recommending Tommy John surgery right now. That doesn't mean that, you know, you're talking about a ligament that's already fraying, and he's still going to be pitching on it. He's still going to be putting a lot of pressure on it. I'm not saying drop him. I'm a guy who drafted Masahiro Tanaka in a bunch of leagues this year because I thought he was going undervalued because of the injury risk, but it's still...
You hear a lot of guys say, I'm going to try and rehabilitate this, and then a week later, they're having Tommy John surgery. Tanaka wasn't the first to try to do it. He was just the first who made it this far.
That happened to Harvey, right? Harvey tried to, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, so we'll keep an eye on Alex Cobb, but that's very disappointing. And I think it's a bit of a I kind of brought this up yesterday on the show when I had two other people on the show. So we can bring it up again. It's kind of a cautionary tale, I think, when you draft injured pitchers. Pitchers who, in spring training, are hurt. I don't think you can really feel all that comfortable with their timeline. It just seems like really risky.
Well, especially when it's forearm or elbow. I mean, Darvish had an elbow going in. Cobb's was
he had
forearm.
Two elbows.
Yeah, he had an elbow injury, and now they're both. They've either had Tommy John surgery or look like they're going to.
Devin Mesoraco may still need hip surgery. We'll find out, I guess, fairly soon his status. Hanley Ramirez had an MRI on his shoulder, came back negative, and he could be back this weekend. I'm very surprised by that. I'm also very surprised that Ryan Vogelsong pitched so well yesterday. So what was that all about?
It's a day of surprises.
It was. Steven Strasburg left Tuesday's start with irritation under his shoulder blade. Would you guys like to comment on that? That was annoying.
He didn't look good at all during that game. He looked uncomfortable throughout. Yeah, it was. I'm surprised they kept him in as long as they did, given his injury history.
They say maybe they just need an alignment. He's going to realignment. He's going to visit the chiropractor.
Okay. So he's like a car.
Yeah, I don't know. I'd be a little uneasy today as a Strasburg owner for sure, but yeah. I wouldn't make a panic move or trade him for 50 cents on the dollar. I'm just saying you're right to worry if you own Strasburg.
What a range of emotions I felt regarding Steven Strasburg yesterday. So I traded for him last week, and he makes the start, and I see two runs in the first inning, and I'm just like, oh, come on, man, what are you doing? And then I see like two runs in the seventh inning. And I had no idea what had happened at that point. So I'm like, all right, nice. So then I checked the box score, and I saw he pitched three innings, and I was like, ah, come on, and now he's injured. also, I have another question. I know I've asked you guys this a couple of times. and I don't remember the answer. So maybe you can just clarify this. Hopefully, it'll be the last time I ask. Why are the lights off in the room that you guys are in right now? Why do you like to podcast in the dark?
These fluorescent lights are harsh. They're difficult. We got to sit in front of our computers all day. I want to rest my eyes. Also,
now?
The light switch is like 8 feet away, and I'm too lazy to turn it on.
Scott's closer.
Yeah. I came in, and Chris was just sitting here in the dark in front of his laptop.
That works for me.
With the laptop closed.
Let's talk about a prospect. I think he's a prospect. Jose Perella could be activated today for the Yankees. He's an infielder, and the Yankees could use some hitting in their middle infield. Any interest in Jose Perella?
Boy, that's a liberal use of the term prospect.
That's why I said I think he's a prospect. Maybe I'm wrong.
I actually do kind of like him, I think, compared to the general population, compared to the Yankees themselves. For a guy who's eligible at some thin positions, the minor league production, extra base power, some speed, it's pretty good. I don't think the Yankees are going to play him significantly, so I'd say no. Not much fantasy relevance here.
I could see him playing against righties, actually, because Steven Drew only hits lefties. He's slugging over 600 against lefties, even though he's left-handed, and he's been just awful against righties.
And we're coming up on more than a year of this now with him.
With the lefty-righty thing?
Well, no, just with him being bad.
Him being bad, yeah. Yeah, and Gregorius is not exactly doing well either offensively or defensively. So Perella's interesting.
I think if it happens. It would take Joe Girardi going against the book, starting lefty against lefties and righty against righties. But, you know, maybe. We'll see.
Well, I will tell you that in the FanDuel lineup that I've already made that is subject to change, I've got Steven Drew in there against the lefty, Mark Burley. More on that later. Brandon Morrow. Hey, Brandon Morrow's on the DL. So it wasn't a day of surprises after all. He's on the DL with shoulder inflammation, thinks he'll be back soon, and Odrysimer Despaigne will start Thursday at Arizona. Anybody want to pick up Despaigne?
I just heard that joke. That's funny.
Oh, thank you.
Morrow on the DL?
Yeah. That was came out of nowhere.
Sure. Despaigne is interesting in a Bartolo Colon sort of way, which, if you heard our discussion about Colon 20 minutes ago, isn't the endorsement it sounds like.
You think we've been on the air for 20 minutes?
10 minutes?
Turn the damn lights on. You've lost track of time. like 10 minutes ago we had that discussion. So Despaigne might just be a short stint. Morrow says he's not exactly hurt. He's just kind of resting right now.
Yeah, just like Morrow. A streaming option if they're pitching at home.
Yeah. And George Springer getting checked for a concussion after he collided with the outfield wall. He made a great catch.
Yeah, that was rough looking.
Yeah, it was. FanDuel hosts one-day fantasy contest, as you know. And for every dollar you deposit, FanDuel's going to match it with up to $200 that's going to get earned as you play. So you get a bonus of up to $200 if you can remember three simple letters, CBS. Use our offer code CBS when you sign on and log into FanDuel right now and get started. And you should be playing. It's a lot of fun. And yesterday was successful. Made about $2.
Ooh.
Yep. And then I was running late today, so I spent the $2 and more on a cab to work.
Aw.
Yeah.
No. Are you a one lineup a day kind of guy?
Four lineups yesterday is the first time. Whoa. Actually, two different lineups in four contests.
So 50 cents per.
No. I had four $1 entries, two 50-50s, and two tournaments. And I cashed in three of the four. Which made me over $2.
I'm very much opposed to the one lineup a day mentality. It seems like I only tweet out one lineup, and it seems like the lineup I tweet out is always one of the worst lineups I have for the day.
And I learned yesterday that I should have known this, but maybe it's not so obvious. When you're in FanDuel, if you look at the contest, if it has a little M next to it, you can enter multiple entries into the same tournament. And Heath said, you really should. I mean, if you can. It's hard to win a tournament if you're only entering one lineup. Or just play a tournament.
You've got people entering 50.
Yeah. Or just play a tournament that doesn't have the little M next to it. And if you only want to enter one lineup, you'll have better chance in that regard. Standouts from Tuesday's games. What do you guys Who do you guys want to nominate here?
Lots of choices. I'm going to go with Shelby Miller. It's probably the best place to start, right?
Yep.
Complete game shutout, 8 strikeouts against the Phillies. But that's back-to-back starts now where the strikeout rate has been up to where it was during his rookie season when he was at his best. And only one walk over the 9 innings in this one, so the control that sometimes brought him down. 99 pitches, he was very efficient. It was against the Phillies, so, you know, if it was an isolated start, I wouldn't be so inclined to move him up in my rankings, but back-to-back with genuine improvement, he's now a top 60 pitcher for me in mixed leagues, which is saying something.
Yeah, it's all about the sinker. You can thank Justin Masterson for teaching him how to throw a sinker.
I guess. I actually want to look into that. Was he throwing that? Did you check the Brooks baseball?
I didn't check game by game, but month by month, he's throwing it, you know, quite a bit. I think somewhere around maybe 20 to 30% of the time.
And it wasn't the case in his last start. I didn't get to check a chance to check after this start, so maybe I should have before I came on the air.
Yeah, Scott.
But it seemed like he saw the biggest drop in strikeouts last year when he went to the more of the sinker ball approach and less of a curveball.
Well,
guy,
maybe so. he can start to create a synthesis of those two styles.
Yeah,
you know, put it all together now.
But even if the strikeouts drop, I mean, he's just pitching more effectively since the end of last season.
Yeah, and that's
well, but it was that last, like, 10-start stretch where he kind of, I think his ERA was around 3, but his strikeouts were down.
Mm-hmm. The whip was below 1 during that stretch. He was good.
It's but just whether it's sustainable is the question.
Yeah, and even if it is sustainable, if there's not strikeouts there, there's limits to his ceiling that I'd rather not place on a guy who seemed to have a very high ceiling in the beginning. So, not a open and shut case here, but it's clear he's a must-own pitcher in fantasy based on the last couple starts.
Threw 32% sinkers yesterday, 25% his last start, 38%. He's throwing it quite a bit.
48.5% ground ball rate backs that up. That's a career high.
Yeah. All right, Chris, it's your turn to nominate it's your turn to nominate a player.
Jesse Chavez.
Yeah.
Was kind of a big disappointment last time out. But, you know, I think he's made 3 starts now this season. 2 of the 3 have been very good, 6 innings, 1 run or less in each. And he had 7 strikeouts to 1 walk yesterday. And that's the big thing for me is whether he can sustain the strikeout rate as a starter that he was putting up as a starter last year and as a reliever this year, is going to be a key for me.
Shane Green was terrible for the 3rd straight time. In Shane Green's last 3 starts, he has allowed 23 hits and 20 earned runs in 11 innings. Drop him or hold him, Shane Green?
I'm probably not dropping him yet, just because I don't know if there's a starting pitcher out there that I want to pick up for him, but I'm really frustrated. You know, early on he was doing really well with a non-existent strikeout rate, and that was a big red flag for me because he struck out so many guys last season.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he looked like last season a guy who could thrive getting away from Yankee Stadium with a good ground ball rate and good strikeout rate and decent control, and this season the strikeout rate's gone away and everything else has pretty much stayed the same. I don't know how much upside he has right now with that strikeout rate.
All right, I'm going to read an email here from Shane from Ladner, British Columbia, the hometown of James Paxton. And he says, I'm in a 10-team head-to-head categories league. Should I drop Shane Green for Jesse Chavez, Matt Shoemaker, or James Paxton?
Those you said it's a categories league?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
For Chavez, Shoemaker, or Paxton, would you drop Shane Green?
Were you going along the lines of Chavez?
If Chavez was relief eligible in a head-to-head league, I might do that, but I think he probably still has more upside than...
I don't know. Those are two pretty good pitchers, Shoemaker and Paxton.
Hasn't done it yet, though.
His last 2 starts.
He hasn't put up the strikeout rate, I guess, is what I want to say.
I think he'll still be better than Green, even if he doesn't put up the strikeouts.
Yeah, I mean, the strikeouts weren't there for Paxton last year either. It's actually a better rate so far this year than last year. And... you know, I think most everyone was pretty satisfied with the performance then. I would lean Shoemaker over him since they're both out there, but I guess I'm not just in a vacuum. I'm not thrilled with the idea of dropping Green, but I would drop him for either of those two pitchers, Shoemaker first.
Okay.
Let me give you guys four players who are owned in 12% of CBSSports.com leagues or fewer. Carlos Perez made his debut for the Angels yesterday. He's a catcher. He had a walk-off home run, and he doubled as well. Kyle Blanks, he's crushing it right now, 391 with three home runs in six games. Kelly Johnson, he's also crushing it right now. And Michael Lorenzen for the Reds had a very good start last night. Six innings, three hits, one run, three walks, four strikeouts after a bad start in his major league debut against Milwaukee. So we got Carlos Perez, Kyle Blanks, Kelly Johnson, and a starting pitcher, Michael Lorenzen. Interest in any of these four?
Yeah. All right, they were Blanks, Johnson, Lorenzen, and who was the fourth?
Carlos Perez.
Okay. Blanks and Johnson are the two most interesting to me. Blanks, I think I said it on Monday's podcast, so... You
know, yeah.
Just that I feel like he's a guy who's been passed over so many times for no good reason, because it seems like in spurts he's shown exactly what he's been in the minor leagues, a power-hitting guy who also gets on base at a very high rate. Those are rare. It seems like Mitch Moreland's recovery from elbow surgery is going to be really quick one, so mid-May return potentially. If that makes Blanks just a platoon option, it won't really matter. He's getting passed over again. But if not, if he can hold on to this job, I think there's a good chance he becomes mixed league relevant.
How about Johnson? I'm surprised that you have some interest in Kelly Johnson. He's been such a dud for the last few years.
Well, mostly last year, and a lot of that was playing time issues. And I don't know that he's going to play consistently enough to be a mixed league guy either. But he has been in the very recent past, and just in terms of a short-term play, he's always been notoriously streaky. Like, when he was an everyday player, I felt like he was the streakiest player in baseball. Just to put it in perspective, 2 years ago, when he was last playing regularly, he had 330 with seven home runs in May, 333 with four home runs in July, and then right around 200 the other 4 months. So that's what you're looking at with Johnson. It may be a case where you pick him up now, write him out, and then 3 weeks from now, you're dropping him again.
Michael Lorenzen, anyone? Carlos Perez, anyone?
I find those two guys a little more intriguing than the other two just because the other two we kind of know what they are. They've kind of proven themselves to be pretty bleh. Whereas Perez...
You're falling into the Blanks trap that all the teams have.
I mean, sure, but at some point... You know, if it's so many different teams, the common denominator is him. If he can't get a job, there's something he's doing wrong.
Well,
right?
It's only been two before this, right. To be fair. The Padres and the Athletics.
Pitchers Parks, by the way.
I'm just saying I feel like Blanks has gotten Steve Pierce, except he had even more of a pedigree than Steve Pierce in the first place. And I know that doesn't sound like a great thing now because Pierce is slumping so badly. But...
Hey, second baseman Steve Pierce.
Oh, sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
But Carlos Perez, you know, looking at his minor league number, he's a high contact guy. He's a high on-base guy. So just because of how many catcher injuries we have, I think he could be worth a look. But I'm not terribly excited about either one of those guys.
It sounds to me like just based on your disagreements that Johnson and Blanks are like the flour tortillas of this discussion. And Perez and Lorenzen are the corn tortillas.
Well, look, I like both.
Okay.
Corn and flour tortillas, where I don't really like any of these players.
That's a good analogy. Then these players are like the enchiladas I had last night, which just weren't very good at all. JD Martinez, guys, he is 6 for his last 40 with 20 strikeouts and one walk. Concerned or just a slump?
Not concerned about that, but his strikeout rate overall has kind of skyrocketed, including obviously that 20 for 40, 20 strikeouts and 40 at bats, rate is going to increase it, but 33% of his plate appearances have ended with a strikeout this season. That's a little alarming for a guy who really only has a track record of one season.
Right. Would you rather have J.D. Martinez or Matt Holliday in a roto league?
I'd rather have Holliday, but that really hasn't changed based on the way the last couple weeks have gone.
Chris?
I think Martinez has more upside, especially with the power. It doesn't seem like Holliday's going to be a power hitter anymore.
All right, would you rather have J.D. Martinez or Yoenis Cespedes? A decision I make three times a week in FanDuel.
It's a concern because with Martinez, you were expecting a little more contact at least. And if they're both striking out a ton, Cespedes probably has more power upside, right?
I don't know. I don't think so. I think Martinez does.
I guess I'll go Martinez.
You know what? The point is, it's obvious you guys still value J.D. Martinez very high, even though he's slumping.
I don't know about this rush judgment about Holliday not being a power hitter anymore. He had 14 of his home runs last year after the All-Star break.
Great. He has an ISO below 100 this season.
Well,
he's hitting a ton of ground
balls.
First
week of May.
Sure, but he's not hitting the ball in the air anymore. That's the biggest thing for me.
Well, maybe he'll start to.
Maybe he will, but we're a fifth of the way through the season. He's at a 22.4% fly ball rate. He's not pulling the ball anymore. He hits the ball hard. He's putting good contact on the ball, but
there was a lot of people writing him off in the first half last year, and he straightened it out. So with his track record, I'm not. It depends what you mean by a power hitter. I mean,
he's not J.D. Martinez. He's not J.D. Martinez.
Runs. No, he's not. But he does a lot of things Martinez doesn't do, like hit for average, get on base. He's going to have many more runs scored.
Yeah,
probably.
But if we're talking about Roto, I think
run
I might value
and batting average
J.D.'s power more, okay, since it's a little harder to find.
And if you think that was nerdy, people, just wait until it's Chris and Al tomorrow.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Get your graphing calculators out for that one. Time for a series of relevant emails.
Adam.
What? What?
He never saw Revenge of the Nerds. He doesn't know it's coming.
Who did? I didn't?
Yeah.
Oh, I quote Revenge of the Nerds. Are you kidding? Did you know? I don't think I told you this. Did I say this on the podcast? What song I was listening to before last week's Al and Chris podcast?
No.
I was listening to "You've Got to Put One Foot in Front of the Other," the Revenge of the Nerds house cleaning montage song.
Wow.
Because I was getting ready for the Nerdcast.
So I'm the nerd.
Yeah.
I'm the nerd.
Adam, and what other, like, group of people are you not considered the nerd, you know?
How about that nerdy, am I?
Well, it depends who you're hanging out with, is what I'm saying.
No, just around Chris and Al, I'm not the nerd.
Look, I'm cool nerd, though.
Yeah,
that's
of course.
The thing you have to understand.
I agree with that. There's nothing. See, baseball allows cool nerds. Like, this is where cool nerds thrive on FanGraphs and places like that, and wherever shows batted ball velocity. Where do you get that stat, Chris?
BaseballSavant.com. FanGraphs has it now. There's all kinds of places, man.
Series of relevant emails. I let our emailers produce the show today. Chris from Boston. Which Cardinals pitcher do you think will secure the number 5 spot in the rotation?
I would bet Jamie Garcia gets the first crack at it, but I'd like to see. I think Marco Gonzalez has a better chance of being there at the end of the season.
You know, I actually put in a bid for Tyler Lyons last night at like the fourth inning, and I had a free roster spot because Morrow was going on the DL,
mm-hmm,
and he struck out 9 guys, and I was like, what is happening here? And then I looked at his minor league numbers this year, and Lyons is actually pitching really well. So I was thinking, I don't know, maybe there's a chance something happened and he's good now. And then the fifth inning happened, and I took away the claim. So
seven strikeouts is what
seven?
He finished with.
Yeah,
so it must have been 7.
But it was in 4 innings. So
yeah. Well, I only saw
made
the
his
results,
first
so.
Made his first rehab start.
Yeah, it would look great. The thing about Garcia is he keeps suffering all these injuries into his shoulder of all places, which you know would think would just destroy him, and he always comes back and he's like the same as he always was. and then he's hurt again.
And that's why I think, that's the main thing why I think
yeah.
Gonzalez has a better chance to be there
in the end.
The number five pitcher at the end of the season.
Yeah.
All right, Nick in Charlottesville, Virginia. What's your prognosis on Victor Martinez? Would you trade him for Hosmer or Kendrys Morales?
I don't think I'd trade him for either one of those guys.
How are you feeling about Hosmer, though? I'm starting to get pretty excited about Hosmer. Got to be honest. Another home run yesterday. He's hit two of his four home runs off Danny Salazar this season. I don't know what that means, but.
He's probably only going to face Danny Salazar one or two more times.
Yeah, I know. I'm just saying that's a really good pitcher.
I mean, his strikeout rate's pretty much the same. He's hitting for more power, but we're also at the point in the season where one extra home run can bump your ISO up 20 points.
I know. I was excited even before yesterday's home run, though. It just seems like we've seen from Hosmer now. Like, we think of Hosmer as like this epic, colossal disappointment, but I think it's only because his bad years were following the years where we decided, oh yeah, this guy's worth drafting in the fifth round, so we're getting used to getting burned by him.
Yeah.
He's had two really productive, even by first base standard,
seasons. I'm not willing to say he's like some major failure. I don't know if he's, like, he's not a 320 hitter. So, depending on where that average falls, is he a 280 hitter with 15 home run potential? And do we think an extra, like,
well,
15 home runs through May 5th, you know, if it was three home runs through May 4th, that one extra home run makes him look better, but on the whole, it shouldn't change your projection of him.
Those two good years I'm referring to, he's basically a 300 hitter with 20 homer power. And
I think
there's some improvement. There's room for some improvement at his age from that.
That was also when he struck out in 15% of his at-bats or fewer. He's up to 19% this season.
It's early enough where a couple games could make a big difference there.
Sure.
Too.
Yeah.
That's what we're saying is that it's too early and he hasn't stood out enough for me to change my opinion of him. And I'm certainly not trading Victor Martinez for him.
That's fair. I'm not either, getting back to the original question. But we could reach a point where I'd do that very soon.
Well, Hosmer, and I'm glad you mentioned that, Scott, because we had an email from John in Montville who said, hey, Steph, Seth, and Dell. I know our basketball guy, Chris Towers. Yeah, you knew that one. he said, why aren't you moving Eric Hosmer up in the rankings? Doesn't he have top 12 first baseman upside? And so then I did a little bit of research and this might not mean anything, but he's hit three home runs in like his last six games, I think, Hosmer. And last year, he hit three home runs in seven games in mid-June, and then he went 18 games without an extra base hit. But I'm not, I don't know if that means anything. I just thought that was actually kind of cool, kind of interesting.
I mean, I think what it tells you is that he's not a great power hitter.
It does. That was quite a slump, though.
Sure. He's not going to go through an 18 game. I'll go on record as saying Eric Hosmer will not have 18 straight games without an extra base hit this season.
Now, go ahead, Scott. Go ahead.
Well, I don't think it's fair to, because we've seen it's been such a Jekyll and Hyde career for Hosmer. I don't think it's fair to say he's not a power hitter, unless.
Well,
I don't know how strictly you're defining power hitter. You're defining power hitter as a guy who could hit 30 home runs. I don't think he's that either.
I'm saying a 200 ISO, which he's never done in a full season.
Yeah. All right. For layman's terms,
yeah,
like
I
how
don't
many,
really have a concept, 20,
how many,
bro,
so. 20 a good chance at 20 plus home runs.
You've got to put one foot in front of the other.
Yeah.
All right, sorry.
He's never has done it in a full season. He's done it in some half seasons before.
Like I think he's a guy who like can be a solid power hitter, but you're never going to rely on him for. You know, he's a tier below the second tier power hitters at first base.
I do agree he has top 12 potential because we've seen it before. I'm pretty sure on a per game basis 2 years ago he was. I know the stat I kept citing was in the second half from June 1st on that year or something. He was better than Freddie Freeman on a per game or something like that. I don't know.
It's entirely possible he could be a top 12 first baseman, but going back to that,
yeah,
I wouldn't put him in the top 12 right now, based on what we've seen for a month and 5 days.
Yeah,
and I wouldn't trade Victor Martinez for him.
Yeah. All right, Now, back to V-Mart. It's hard for me to not be concerned about Victor Martinez, who is 8 for 59 against righties and 8 for 20 against lefties. He obviously can still hit lefties. And Andrew McCutchen, because they both have the same problem right now, and that's a knee injury. It's scarier, in my opinion, for V-Mart because he's, you know, older and has more injury history. But I'm nervous about both of them. Maybe just give him a DL stint or give him 5 days off or something like that. But right now, I think it's concerning for both V-Mart and McCutchen. Where are you guys on them?
Much more concerned about Martinez than McCutchen.
Yeah, that's fair to say.
I think even if they both went on the DL tomorrow, 15 days from now, I would feel much better about McCutchen.
Sure.
And obviously, he's coming from a higher place, but
yeah,
I just think there's a chance Martinez has just lost it. Like, it's unlikely based on how good he was last season, but we've seen players fall off the table at, what, 34, 35 is what he's at?
Mm-hmm.
McCutcheon's 28, 29. Like, it just, players don't just lose their ability. So
no,
if it's just the knee.
It is just the knee, but.
So then I'm not worried about it. It's just whenever the knee gets better, he'll be fine.
I am worried about it though, because they don't want to sit him. You can't sit him as a fantasy owner. You invested a top five pick in him. Like, I'm just, how long is it going to be before Andrew McCutchen is Andrew McCutchen? And the thing is, like, I don't think anyone can answer that question because we don't know what the severity is. So what the heck are you supposed to do? I don't want to sell him. I have him in two leagues. I keep getting offers. I keep turning them down. I don't want to be the moron who sold Andrew McCutchen at his absolute lowest value. But at the same time, it's like, it's really annoying. And if I got a good enough offer, I might consider it. And a good enough offer might be like Adam Jones for Andrew McCutchen.
I get what you're saying, because it is such an uncertainty, and I don't think it's worth forfeiting a season just for the sake of proving you're right. Like, I'm willing to give up McCutchen for less than I paid for him in the first place if it means I still have a good season because of it, which Adam Jones would allow you to do.
Mm-hmm.
But
I think Jones is where it starts getting interesting.
Yeah.
But that's a pretty good player. Like, you're not exactly bottoming out.
No.
With Adam Jones in value, and
it is a little bit of a sell low.
A little bit.
But yeah.
Well, then what about like a third round pick type player? Maybe
like a Matt Kemp or Justin Upton. Upton Knight isn't quite third round, but
maybe like a Bryce Harper. For McCutchen.
That's probably, I'd have to draw the line there.
I wouldn't do it either, but I wouldn't criticize someone for doing it. You know, if we were grading that trade, I'd probably give it like a C at this point, or maybe like a C minus, but I would understand because here's the thing. Like, look at George Springer last year, right? What did he have? A knee injury, and he played through it and he didn't steal any bases. So that's
the bigger concern.
Yeah, I'm concerned.
I'm not so concerned about his hitting.
Right. He'll rebound. He'll get better. But what if he doesn't steal bases this year because of the knee? I think that has to be a legitimate concern. Just give the guy like 5 days off or 3 days off or something.
Hopefully.
Yeah.
It'd be worth it.
All right. Chris from Dana Point says, how do you guys value Michael Pineda? Could he be a top 20 pitcher rest of season?
I think he absolutely could, but I've been very high on him all season.
Yeah, it's hard not to be. It's just health. It really just comes down to health, and there's no reason to be confident in the health.
I mean, the one thing I like is that his velocity is actually way down from his peak. Now, that's usually a warning sign, but we're talking about someone who, you know, he's down to 91 miles per hour with his fastball right now, but he's still getting strikeouts. He's still getting swinging strikes. His slider's still a big weapon. He's added this really good changeup.
Mm.
I think lower velocity, if it's intentional and not the result of something wrong in his shoulder or arm, I think that could be a good thing with regards to keeping him healthy.
Yeah,
he's lower velocity usually means less effectiveness.
He has reinvented himself as a pitcher, and I think the lower velocity is a result of the shoulder surgery, but also
a result of what he wants to do.
Yeah, it's just what he wants to do. He's terrific.
Yeah, he's a ground ball pitcher with pinpoint control and. Well, not pinpoint control with the changeup, because that pitch is all over the place, but hitters can't pick it up. That's the most amazing thing about it. He has no idea where it's going, but neither do hitters.
His I mean, the control, yeah, I mean, it works for him. He's got his strikeout-to-walk ratio this year. I had it written down.
38-3.
Yeah, 38-3, thank you.
It's pretty good.
It's absurd. And it was like that last year, too. Yep. It's close to that as a rookie, even when he was throwing 97.
All right, two more emails here, real quick. John wants to know if we should still hold on to Jimmy Rollins or dump him for someone else. Like an Eric Ibar or a Danny Santana.
Shortstop's so crappy. I'd rather have Jimmy Rollins.
And Kurt from Saskatchewan has no idea what he's doing with Jeff Samardzija. When he starts him, Samardzija's bad. When he sits him, Samardzija's good, like last night. So what do you think about Jeff Samardzija? Was Tuesday's start the positive sign I've needed to plug him in again? Is there any accounting for his poor fantasy performance thus far?
Two of his last three starts have been really good, I think. I don't think you're I think benching Jeff Samardzija is probably an overreaction. But there are warning signs. There are things to be concerned about. He's getting a lot of fly ball outs lately. I think he's had double digit fly ball outs in five of his six starts, which is always a concern.
His velocity was at its highest point in this start. And I know specifically after that last start, the Don Cooper, their pitching coach, noticed, okay, his velocity on his slider specifically is lower than it needs to be. It was up about a mile per hour and a half yesterday. Mm-hmm. So, I think it's a step in the right direction. I'm not saying you have to start him next time out. It would be worth maybe seeing a couple in a row. And not getting upset when he has a good start. It's a good thing. Even if he's on your bench, it's a good thing as a Samardzija owner when he has a good start, you know?
Mm-hmm. All right, it's going to be a shorter show today, guys. I have to get out of the studio a little bit earlier, so let me run through some more news and notes. Christian Yelich will likely return Friday. San Diego catcher Austin Hedges is going to get significant playing time. Derek Norris could play some first base. We'll see how that one shakes out. Hunter Pence getting close to a rehab assignment. Greg Holland will likely be activated today. Nick Swisher is back. Mark Teixeira is playing through a minor lat injury. He homered yesterday. Manny Machado has been batting leadoff three straight games. He homered last night at the Mets. Coco Crisp could be back today, but Billy Burns is making the case to keep getting playing time. Bob Melvin said, quote, "We're basically seeing what we saw in spring training," end quote. He said that about Billy Burns. Your guess on what happens with Crisp and Burns and maybe Mark Canna? Or a DH spot?
I mean, Crisp is going to get hurt at some point.
That's
kind of, he just can't stay healthy. Like, it's not like to make light of it. He's at a point in his, he's never been a guy who stays healthy. And he's at a point in his career where he can't play every day anyway.
Yeah. I'd be, I'm less interested in Canna than Burns.
Okay. Justin Bour is starting over Michael Morris at first base for the Marlins right now. Interested in Justin Bour?
In daily, when he's going against right-handed pitchers.
Okay.
And you know he's in the lineup.
Scooter Jeanette's off the DL. Angel Pagan is a lacerated finger. Chris Taylor started again instead of Brad Miller, and Miller's going to be a utility player now. He's going to play some outfield. J.J. Hardy should be back this weekend. Leonis Martin day-to-day. Kelvin Herrera allowed his first home run in 105 and a third innings. That's incredible. Steve Pierce was out last night with a tummy ache. Patrick Corbin could be back in about a month. And Jose Iglesias day-to-day with a groin injury. Two up, four down, rotation. I think we'll finish with this. We'll save grade the trade for tomorrow. Two up, Mookie Betts and Marlon Byrd. Mookie Betts homered twice, and he seems to have like one awesome game a week, but he's still very productive in fantasy. And Marlon Byrd finally did something. I think he had really good numbers against Jeff Locke going into the game. He homered and doubled yesterday. He's owned 30% of leagues. Anything to say on Betts and Bird?
Well, I mean, undermined Betts' production here in recent days. He's, last eight games, he's batting .333 with five doubles and also those two home runs. So the strikeout rate has been, it's been decent throughout. So I think his batting average is going to continue to rise.
Is it possible to call him a buy low candidate? He's been good.
Yeah.
But given the amount of hype, the fact that he's hitting .234 with a .244 BABIP.
I think the hype is justified. As productive as he's been as fantasy, even with the low batting average, I think he may have top five potential as an outfielder.
I know, it's crazy. It's like, kind of like Billy Hamilton, whose fantasy production is has outperformed his actual production. I think just batting in the top of the order and being able to steal bases in a lineup that should score runs, like Betts is really good in fantasy.
He could go 16 homers, 15 homers, 30 stolen bases pretty easily this season.
And that batting average should get up there.
Yeah.
All right, four down. Tell me if you're worried about any of these guys. Jorge Soler, he's played one more game than he played last year, 25 games now, and he has two home runs and 10 RBI and a .265 batting average. Last year, .292 with five home runs and 20 RBI, so not exactly the same pace. Matt Kemp, he only has one home run this year. He's been cold. Gregory Polanco, not really having a very good season. Does have eight steals and eight attempts, but .276 with one home run and five walks, 28 strikeouts for Polanco. And Carlos Santana is doing what he does and gets off to a slow start. He's still the number 12 first baseman in points leagues, but number 19 in Roto. And Santana has .235 batting average and three homers. So the names again are Soler, Kemp, Polanco, and Santana. Are you concerned about any of those guys?
You're putting Chris to sleep here. I don't know if you caught that yawn.
Oh, Chris yawned, I think, the last time he was on, too.
It's nothing personal. It's so dark in this room.
Chris stayed up for the West Coast basketball game last night, didn't
yeah,
he?
Yeah, man. I mean, with Polanco, I think he's a guy where the hype as a prospect was justified because his skill set is so impressive, but the present day skills, you know, he never hit more than 16 home runs. He wasn't this huge hitting prospect. There were a lot of things to like about him, but I'm not terribly surprised that he hasn't lit the world on fire in the majors so far.
I think he's been better than Adam was given credit for again, though. I mean, recently, 304 over his last 11 games, the doubles, we're starting to see those again. The plate discipline hasn't been nearly as good as last year. The plate discipline basically carried him last year. So
and that's why he made four down.
But also a ton of steals, which I wasn't necessarily counting on. So I think overall I'm pretty satisfied as a Polanco owner. And I think there's upside for more.
Okay.
Soler's the one that's a little more discouraging to me. Not that I don't think he can't turn things around. I think there's still a ton of power potential here. But he's kind of going through a Javier Baez phase right now, where it's just not making enough contact.
He seems to be selling out for power, too, because he is one of the league leaders in hard hit average and batted ball velocity. It's just he's not hitting the ball all that often to make it worth it.
Soler or Betts rest of season?
Betts.
Yeah.
Soler or J.D. Martinez?
J.D.
Martinez, yeah.
All right, then Soler, like who's behind Soler? It's kind of like the big drop, the tier drop off at outfield.
You know, I have my rankings open so I can tell you.
Soler or Carlos Gonzalez? I'll pretty much take a bag of balls over Cargo.
Yeah.
You guys are taking Cargo over Soler?
Yeah.
Interesting.
You know what? I think I need to move Soler down a little in my rankings because the guys I have behind him right now, Billy Hamilton, Alex Gordon, Gregory Polanco, that's a close call there.
Polanco was the one I was thinking of among guys we mentioned. I might take Soler over him because of the power potential, but
yeah.
Even then, the strikeouts are really concerning. It's going to be really tough for this guy to hit for average.
Any thoughts really quickly on Drew Smyly, Rick Porcello, who was great last night, Danny Salazar, Zach Greinke?
You know, I don't really understand why Porcello's strikeout rate is so high. And not that it's, like, super high by...
It's 8 per 9.
Yeah, it's much higher than we saw last year. It is close to what we saw 2 years ago, though, so maybe there's a little something there. But I don't know how much it's helping him, really, because he's giving up a lot more home runs.
Our good friend, Heath Cummings, friend of the show, has been trying to bait me into writing a Zach Greinke is the Dodgers ace column, and I'm not going to do it.
He has won 10 straight decisions and has a 1.56 ERA, though.
He's really good.
Yeah, he really is.
Turns out Clayton Kershaw's still better.
I would say so. James Paxton, 66% owned. Matt Leto, 66% owned. Jesse Chavez, 49% owned. Who's your favorite of those three?
Chavez and... Head-to-head points, Paxton, and Roto.
That's fair.
And quick DFS advice before I sign off. Mark Burley is awful against the Yankees. So I have Stephen Drew, Brian McCann, and Gardner in my lineup. They all have good numbers against Burley. Lance Lynn, really good at home, facing a Cubs team that strikes out the most. Last time he faced them, 6 innings, 9 strikeouts, 1 earned run, and he's the 7th most expensive starting pitcher. And David Freese, keep an eye on him against Roenis Elias. Freese 3-for-6 against Elias, but more importantly, very good against left-handed pitchers. And he's cheap.
This is a really interesting day for pitchers in FanDuel.
High end and low end.
There's none that cost $10,000. And yet there's names like Chris Sale, Scott Kazmir, and Garrett Cole out there. Cole's going against Cincinnati. Kazmir's going against Minnesota.
Those are good.
Yeah, it's going to be hard for me not to make a lineup with each of those guys.
Okay. That's going to do it for me. Oh, I finally have Mike Trout in the lineup. And I have $900 to spend.
He's going
to
go 0-for-5.
Probably.
Four strikeouts.
I'm basically stacking Yankees and Angels, and we'll see how that works out for me. Chris Towers, Scott White, sorry for the shortened. It's not that short, 53 minutes. Thank you for for your time today. It's good stuff.
Thank you.
Scott.
Enjoyed it, Adam.
All right, good. I'm Adam Azer. Back tomorrow with Nerdcast, Grade the Trade, and plenty more.